Now, as we do from time to time here on 4BC Afternoons, I'm joined by Calvin Ganek. He's a former police officer. He's a criminal lawyer. He's also the managing director of Ganek & Associates. This week, I wanted to ask him about a couple of the big stories that we've been covering on 4BC. One, of course, is the case of Brian Earl Johnston, who now finds himself sentenced to life for the murder of Kelly Wilkinson at her Arundel home. And as more of the details of that horrific case comes to light, I find it so difficult to read. The other, of course, is what's going on in the election at the moment, particularly the council election. So many of us, myself included, received the LNP scratchy in the mail over this last week. And it was, you know, the paraphernalia that comes from political parties when they are campaigning. This one had the face of Jonathan Sharanganathan on them with the slogan, play to lose. So it had play to win, crossed out lose. And then there were panels like a scratchy revealing unlucky symbols. And under those symbols, it said things like higher taxes, 30-kilometre speed limits, higher pet registration costs, cancelling metro projects and traffic chaos. And of course, Jonathan Sharanganathan's come out and said it's just not true, and he was looking for options of whether or not there was a defamation case there. So welcome to 4BC Afternoons once again, Calvin. Thank you for giving us your time.
Good afternoon, Sophie.
First to this case, obviously, that is so high profile, Calvin, another awful, one of the worst domestic violence cases that we have seen in recent times, and has prompted changes in the Queensland Police and the way that they go about policing domestic violence. But if I could go specifically to Brian Earl Johnston, and we know that in Queensland, a life sentence doesn't necessarily mean what many of us would like it to, which is you stay in jail for the term of your natural life. You never know what it is like to taste freedom again. Here we know that in all likelihood he will be eligible for parole in 20 years. Is it about time we relook at those laws, or is it unlikely to change?
I think it's unlikely to change, Sophie. In 1992, this state did a complete overhaul of the sentencing regime. You know, things that lawyers like me rarely see on histories these days, but sentenced to hard labour, life without parole, all of those things. In 1992, we moved away from what I call a jailing system to a corrective system, a rehabilitation centre, a system. So in 1992, those types of sentences were removed, and we moved towards the rehabilitation of offenders, even the most serious of offenders. So I don't think there's going to be a change in the way that some would like, but it's important that people have a full understanding of what the sentencing regime actually means, because it's unlikely this man will ever see the light of day again.
How so?
So he's sentenced to life. So that means he is sentenced to life imprisonment. But there, after 20 years, he's eligible for parole. Not that he will be given parole. So for lesser sentences, less serious crimes, instead of the court ordering a parole eligibility date, they order a parole release date. So in those circumstances, the prisoner knows that on a certain date they will be released. But for more serious offences, it's parole release date. So it's very unlikely, unless there are significant, and I want to place some value on that, some significant positive, proactive steps along a long, long period of time, that a person committing this offence would be successful in applying for bail after 20 years. In this state, we also have dangerous prisoner legislation. So it's the extraordinary step of even for those offenders that are imprisoned not for life, they've completed their entire sentence, they can still be held in custody. As much as 20 years eligible for parole, it is a very difficult path for a person that has committed offences like this to receive parole.
It does fill me with just a little bit of, I guess, there's an element of me that hears you say that and goes, well, yeah, I really hope that that's the case. You know, I saw this morning again her sister and brother-in-law who have taken in their children to raise, who spoke, you know, and I can't help. I know that it's difficult sometimes when you have to talk about it from the rule of law. I'm talking about it from the emotional side, where you just see these people who are now raising their sister's children. And, you know, she made the comment where she said, kids are kids, and they went to a party and, you know, another child said to one of Tammy's children, you know, your dad killed your mum. And all I can think about is that these kids have got a life sentence, Calvin. These children will grow up with the scars of what has happened to them, and they are not the only ones. There are other people who go through these sorts of horrific events in life. The idea that their father, who did this to them and to their mother, might one day be free, it just doesn't sit with me, and it doesn't sit with a lot of people who live in our community. We just don't feel like that's right. So I hope that what you're saying is true, and that's what happens.
Yeah, and it's... I guess easy for me to sit here and talk theoretically about the law without those emotions, but everything you say there is absolutely true. I think a significant problem that exists with the criminal justice system is that the lay person doesn't actually have all of these other things explained to them. And I'm not saying they're still right, but it's a complicated system, and just on face value, there's a lot of misinterpretation of how the whole system works on occasion.
Yeah, I think that's particularly true when we assume that judges are always going light. And in this case, he did the only thing that he could do. It couldn't be any more than that.
Yeah, and you know, just to talk a little bit about the most serious offence that obviously exists, and that is murder. That there are situations where that a parole eligibility date can be increased. Mm. So that is that if it's more than one person that has been killed, that increases to 30 years. And if a person kills a police officer, it's 25
years. Yep.
But the key point is, it's still a parole eligibility date. It says that the person is eligible to apply for parole.
Yeah.
But without those rehabilitation measures, extreme rehabilitation measures, and during the entirety of that time, there's still little prospect of a person that has committed this type of offence to be released by the parole board.
Calvin, there was also the other story I mentioned in the introduction there about what's going on with the campaigning at the moment. You know, in some areas of the southeast, it seems to be a little more toxic than others. And here in Brisbane, for the Lord Mayoral candidacy, there's the three major parties. Jonathan Sharanganathan, I'm sure you've now seen and heard about these scratchets and him saying that, you know, it simply isn't true. Is there a defamation case that could be brought in that sort of scenario?
Well, Sophie, around election time, it all gets a little bit excitable, doesn't it?
That's an understatement.
So, listen, I won't comment on whether it's available, but to be successful in regards to a defamation claim, all the circumstances have to be taken into account. It's a question of what we call of fact, whether someone has been defamed. So those circumstances are taken into account. Whether those circumstances are contextually true, whether they're false, and whether the publishing of the material itself has actually had a consequence in lowering someone's reputation. And this is the difficult part of defamation proceedings. Simple embarrassment or something less than serious harm, causation of serious harm, is insufficient for the purposes of a defamation action being successful.
My bigger question is, it must have cost them a fortune. Like, those scratchy things can't be cheap to they can't be cheap to do with that stuff you scratch off. Like, that would have been a pretty penny. But I know you can't make a comment about that. Calvin, at the moment, we also are seeing more and more of, obviously, young people going in and out of the court systems. There's been many, there's been a lot of chest beating about, you know, the toughest laws that we have, this idea that we'll see less repeat offenders coming back out into the community. On a day-to-day basis, in what you're seeing in terms of what's going on in the courts and in and out of the lists, has anything shifted in terms of the dial of there being less repeat offenders when it comes to youth going back out on bail?
So I don't know whether I can identify that there has been a substantial shift, but you love asking me these questions.
I do.
About youth justice, yes. I'll come back to, listen, it's a really difficult problem that no one around the world has solved. What we have is a situation where, despite any theoretical ideas about rehabilitation and preventing recidivist offenders from reoffending, we get to a point with some young people and adults where, just for the sole purposes of protecting the community, they must be sentenced to a period of detention.
Mm-hmm.
How that goes in regards to rehabilitation, I'm not so confident, especially for young people, because I have this saying, you are who you hang with.
Mm.
And if we're sentencing young people on the peripheral to periods of imprisonment, the reality is they are in a detention centre with a whole bunch of serious young offenders learning how to be better at being a criminal.
Mm.
So it is a really difficult question, but I think it's important that there are strong laws so that those laws can be applied when they need to be.
Mm.
And we obviously are in a very difficult situation at the moment with the increase in youth crime generally. And as you've identified on numerous occasions, that youth crime in recent times, the seriousness of that youth crime seems to be more of the issue rather than... There's always been youth crime. I think we all understand that, but it's the seriousness of those crimes that are regularly happening that are of the greatest concern.
Yeah, Calvin, I think we've also identified over time, and I had dinner the other night with somebody who was working in that space in terms of early identification, making sure that kids don't slip through the cracks, finding them the support that they need, all of those things, and an ongoing frustration that while we know the government is certainly throwing a lot of money at it, there is still this lack of long-term thinking. So it's very difficult for these programs that are in place that are trying to do that work that you're saying, you know, getting them before they actually commit the crimes, before they spend too much time with the wrong hangs, as you said, you know, hanging with the people who you know are not the right people for you, that it's very difficult for them to forward plan because anything that they're getting in terms of assistance is in real short-term bursts. So I think we need to rethink completely our approach to finding the kids who will, you know, potentially be the offenders before they offend and putting them in programs that work over a longer period of time. And making sure that those are well resourced to be able to do the work once it's proven, obviously, and the data is there to support that it's working, that they're able to do that work on a more long term basis rather than being short term and reactionary. And I think part of the reason we're in the problem we are is that so much of what we do is reactive and not proactive.
100%. I've said this previously to you, Sophie. A hindsight review of a case study of an individual usually is pretty consistent of a youth offender, and that is that in hindsight, it would have been great to intervene
earlier,
intervention with that child at point A, but point A is usually a long time before they've even come onto the radar of authorities.
Yeah.
And then once they have that first interaction with police, you're already dealing with a young person that has no respect for authority, whether it be parents, teachers, police officers, or the courts.
Mm. Yeah, really appreciate you jumping on and talking to us today, Calvin. Don't be a stranger. I know I keep asking you the same question over and over, hoping that I'll get a different response, but I do appreciate that you jump on to talk to me about it because you're there at the coalface in the thick of it day after day.
No worries. Thank you, sir.
Good on you. That's Calvin Ganek, Managing Director of Ganek and Associates. It's 22 minutes past one.